As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Buffalo Beat. My name is Joe Biscaglia. Thank you all for joining me on draft week, where the Buffalo Bills will finally make their selection, maybe on Thursday. Who knows? It might get a little squirrely. But just as is the tradition in the run-up to the draft, I like to bring on my friends and talk about the Bills, what they could do within the draft, and everything along those lines. And today, we have a triple pot. Because it is me. I'm always here, so I'm not important. And also, Matt Perino of Syracuse.com, Elena Getzenberg of ESPN.com. This is a round table, even though it's kind of a triangle. But thank you both for jumping in.
Delighted to be here. Thank you for having us. I like the triangle thing. I'm here. It's a triangle, but it could be round a round as well. Table. We could be at a round. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But delighted to be here.
I was really interested to see who was going to win that standoff about who would talk first.
I thought he was going to, but it's fine. That's fine. Ladies first. So,
one of my lessons for my journalism class in interviewing is we talk about dead air chicken and how you always have to win. So if I would have lost that battle, I would have had at least three students reach out to me and see, you're full of it, Perino. You're full of it. So I had to win.
Dead air chicken. Is everyone... happy that the draft will finally be happening.
Yes.
I think at this point, paralysis by analysis.
I hate the lead up to the draft. It's probably like as a beat reporter, my least favorite time of the year is like the like weird, like kind of around free agency time until like right before the draft. I hate it. I despise it. It's just so much unknown. Like we're covering like, you know, things that sometimes you don't have the answer to, or you're kind of like projecting and that kind of thing. And so I will be very excited for the draft.
Like, it's always line season in the NFL. Like, I mean, GMs, head coaches, and we deal with this in every press conference, but it feels like this, to Elena's point, like this is a little bit like of an extra level to all of that. So like, yeah, once we push past this, we know who is going to be, you know, the rookies on this Bills roster going into the season. I feel like that's when you kind of check that off-season box and it's like, all right, now we're building towards the season. And as beat reporters, I feel like that's when our season, our new year really is. Like once the draft ends and we kind of start pushing towards training camp.
See, when you guys were talking about how much you didn't like all that stuff, that's like everything that I love about this job. I love the projection. I love the forecasting. I love the puzzles. I love everything about it. So this will be a fun little exercise then if we have people on complete opposite sides of the spectrum here. All right, let's get into the Bills because they draft maybe on Thursday. We'll see when they'll draft on Thursday. We will also see. So I've had you both on before. This is I like to keep it open-ended right at the top of the show. Matt, we'll start with you, so there's no dead air chicken again.
Nice.
In terms of the Bills, what is on your brain first and foremost, and then we'll just kind of splinter off of that.
So I think like there's so much like hope amongst a big portion of the fan base that there's some type of aggressive move by Bean again to go get that wide receiver. But I've never been more comfortable with the idea of whether it be trading back, whether it be standing pat and adding multiple players. Like, I don't know, like whether or not it's conscious or subconscious, like if you get aggressive and you trade up for a wide receiver, and we've talked about it, Joe, like along this whole process, like there are some benefits to doing that. I mean, Brian Thomas Jr. is a really fun player. If you're able to get up in range for Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze, great. I mean, the Ringer did their mock draft the other day and had the Bills trading up to 22 for a Donnie Mitchell out of Texas. And there was a lot of pushback in that department from Bills fans. But the problem with that is then I almost feel like it might be subconscious, but Brandon Bean may be sitting back and not looking to address the position again later in the draft. And that's one of the things I've really liked about the Green Bay Packers build is year after year, they add multiple receivers in the draft. And then they landed something moving on from Devontae Adams a couple of years ago, where they have a lot of different flavors, a lot of different options. I like that idea for the Bills moving forward. Do I think they need a bona fide number one wide receiver? We can get into that, but I like the idea of adding different skill sets, and they already have a couple of different skill sets on their roster at receiver. So it's almost like I'm very comfortable with the idea of them doing what beat reporters hate, and that is sitting around till number 28 and then trading out of the first round and us having to write stories about that.
I think beat reporters actually hate trading for seventh round picks more than not trading up.
100%.
That is the actual worst. Elena, what about you?
Well, I think it's interesting off of that. I do agree with Matt that, like, I don't know, I don't think trading back in this scenario will be the worst thing in the world. I think we're kind of in a spot where they are like 28 leaves them with like moving up to a certain amount will cost so much. And I think what we are seeing from the Bills, and especially with trading Steph and like acknowledging that that really helps in 25 with the cap, they're like clearly looking forward in the years to come, and like whatever 24 may end up being with how safety goes and what they end up doing a wide receiver. Like there's a lot of questions still to be answered. So I think they're also looking to the future. And I do think giving up a lot would be a mistake. I don't think we've seen Brandon Bean like feel a need to trade up, especially recently in the first round. And we can debate Kyer Elam to death if we if we would like, but I don't know if that's for today or a different day. But you know, whether these trade ups have worked out or not, and like obviously in this situation, it could end up being for a lot more. And I think giving up a lot in 25 would be a mistake, because I think that's, you know, it's going to be another year of building up, needing to have a really good draft. So that's kind of where I am, where I think if you're like sacrificing too much, it has to be for one of these top guys. Otherwise, I don't think trading up makes sense, because there's so many wide receivers in this class. Like we've heard it time and time again. But I also think, like, I don't know, this is a draft where like, I think they're going to move around a lot because of like, he keeps talking. We know Brandon Bean like is still upset that he doesn't have a third round pick. And I feel like he's going to do everything in his power to get a third round pick, however that happens. So like trading back to me wouldn't be a bad thing or a surprise at all. But who knows? He also is so impatient that like we're saying exactly all this, and like him moving up four picks wouldn't surprise me at all. But I think it would be, I don't think from what we've seen of this wide receiver class and of what trading up recently has brought, that it would be the right move in my opinion.
Yeah. So what is interesting is there's these two very distinct camps of where fans are kind of sitting right now, whether it's the go up and get your guy, get one of these top four guys versus, you know, stand pat or trade down. And it's a little bit more divisive this year than it is in past years, just because like there's such an emphasis on getting the receiver above all else. What I do find interesting was the fact that Brandon Bean spent pretty much a good portion trying to tell us that wide receiver was not a need, as big a need as we were making it out to be. So I don't know if you guys read my draft files at all, which came out on Monday, but I found it, you know, worth my time to go back to 2022 when the entire lexicon of draft Bills draft Twitter was about drafting a cornerback. And during that, Brandon Bean essentially used the same exact strategy as he did when he was talking about wide receiver this year. And lo and behold, he drafted a cornerback, obviously, moved up to get a cornerback. I think we all are pretty sure that he wanted Trent McDuffie and then missed out on him and wound up getting Kyir Elam instead. But after the draft, was like the quote I remember most of all was him going, "Yeah, I've been hearing it from everybody. Get a corner from you guys, from neighbors, from kids, from everybody. So we'll all sleep well tonight." That was the end of his quote. And that him trying to sidestep the wide receiver need was, you know, something he had to try to do. But it's clear as day. I mean, to me, there's really no way that they can justify coming out of this draft in particular without coming away with a receiver in the first two rounds, at least. Like, they've got Khalil Shakir, Curtis Samuel, and Mac Hollins. That's their top trio right now. And
don't forget again, Justin Shorter, please, in that conversation.
Listen, I talked about the Justin Shorter hive with John Scott last week, and it is real. It is almost bigger than the Ryan Bates hive from a few years ago.
Wow.
And we don't need to try and upset the hive. But yeah, Shorter is there somewhere. But when you have those three guys, and then again, likening it back to 2022 when Brandon Bean was talking about, you know, we don't really feel like it's that much more of a need. He started talking about Dane Jackson. And it's like Dane Jackson is pretty much Khalil Shakir in this equation, where you have someone that they like, but that doesn't mean that they're not looking to add it pretty aggressively. So I did find it at the very least interesting that he was trying to play that game on or last week when we last spoke with him.
This is such an interesting conversation because it's like you look at the two position groups in both of the drafts and remember, like, there was a steep hill that you fall off of after McDuffie. And I think that every team knew that. And so I think getting up and being aggressive, which Kansas City was the play in that draft. Whereas in this class, after the top three, like, and then like kind of Brian Thomas Jr., depending on who you talk to, I feel like it's like seven or eight guys that have this unbelievable variance in terms of they're all kind of in the same tier, but at the same time, depending on who you talk to, there's people that have Ladd McConkey as can't miss. Then there's people that have Keon Coleman as a guy that you have to take. And then if you talk to another person, they have those two guys completely flipped around. So I guess it comes down to the Bills. How close are all of these guys on their draft board? How much capital is Brandon Bean willing to go up and spend, and how important is it to go up and get that one guy? Let me ask you guys this. How do you view, and maybe a better question is, how do you think the Bills view Dalton Kincaid? Because I think that is, to me, the determinant, or what will determine how aggressive they are at going up and getting a top end guy in this draft.
I don't think can't you view Dalton a certain way and also need a number one wide receiver? Like, what is the, how would he be viewed in a way that would make it like, not, you still also need that guy? Like, how would that,
if you're,
yeah.
It, right. So if you're building your offense around Dalton Kincaid, right, and you just want to add a bunch of different weapons to the mix, won't that preclude you from being aggressive and spending precious assets to go up and get a guy that's going to take potentially targets away from Dalton Kincaid?
I suppose it's how you feel about Dawson Knox in this same realm too, because if they're trying to do more 12 personnel again, which they moved away from once Joe Brady became the offensive coordinator, that probably opens it up a bit more to what you're talking about. But in terms of needing another receiver, like, they're going to be out in 11 personnel more often than not. And
right.
Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel, they're at best a number two in this league. Like, mm-hmm. Curtis Samuel has proven to be nothing more than a number three or a number four. He had that one season where he went over 800 yards for Carolina when he was with Joe Brady. Yes, I know it was the Joe Brady year, but outside of that, he's been under 700 yards every other year of his career. Khalil Shakir just burst onto the scene last year, but what is his ceiling? Is he going to be pushing up more? Is he going to be doing something along those lines? Mac Hollins is turning 31 in September. And has only had over 30 targets in a season once. So what are we doing here? Like, that, it that's why, to me, and not like to move aside from the topic you're bringing up with Dalton Kincaid, because I think it's a good one, but I just don't know that Kincaid and his route tree, which is very middle-centric as opposed to what they'd be looking for in a boundary receiver. And one of the biggest issues that they had was lack of explosive plays. And I don't think Dalton Kincaid is really helping you get over the hump in that department. So that's why, that's where it comes down to skill sets and what they're looking for most. Are they looking to fill the Gabe Davis prototype? Or are they trying to do something a little bit different? These are some of the things that I'm thinking about with wide receiver, because that cluster that you're talking about, Matt, there are so many different things to choose from. Like Keon Coleman is the non-separation, huge contested catch, go up and get it guy. But they've been drifting away from that since they got rid of Kelvin Benjamin. But do they want to go back now that cover two shell is more of a thing? Adonai Mitchell has warts in his profile, but he's 6'2", 205, and has the speed. Then you've got Xavier Worthy, who can get down the field lightning fast, but can't deal with physicality at the line of scrimmage. Then Ladd McConkey, Roman Wilson, Ricky Pearsall. These guys I clumped together because they're like, okay, they're basically the same position as Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel. So it's really an exercise for them to determine what they want to be.
Yeah, I think the other thing too that I keep thinking back with in terms of like moving up is the problem for the Bills is that everybody knows they need a wide receiver, which I thought like was part of when, you know, Brandon was talking to us last week, and it was very much so like, oh no, we don't know if we need one. It's like, you almost, right, you have to say that in part because you can't be like, yes, we desperately need a wide receiver. But on the other end, like, who, if I'm a team in the Bills call, I'm going to make that price really high. Because I know that they need it and that there's not much of a choice. And that if he's calling me, that means that there's someone they like and they're trying to get and that they're desperate for a wide receiver. Because I think the need is that high. Like, I'm kind of with Joe where it's like, it's not good options right now. This is not like we don't have a coherent offense right now to like put on the field, like with the wide receivers in that room. So I think they're in a weird spot where it's like, because of right, the way the groupings are of this class, where like, that's why I think like trading back might have to be the best option, because I don't know. I think the price would be high to move up because of the need that the teams know the Bills have. Like, it's not, everyone knows that they don't have big options at wide receiver. And I think that makes it hard to trade up and down when you have an obvious need like that. But that's when I think like trading back comes into play, because you might not have the, like moving up like a large amount would cost them so much that like, I don't know, that it seems like how that actually working out to like make sense is like it seems unlikely. Like, I just don't know like how it's going to work, but there's also like a lot of quarterbacks. Like, I think if a lot of quarterbacks go early, it all shifts it. So it's going to be interesting.
Sure. Let me ask you guys this. Matt, did you want to jump in with something real quick?
No, I just want to make sure I'm clear. I'm not advocating for them not to come out of this draft with anything less than two wide receivers.
Oh, yeah.
My argument is like, if you go get like a Roma Dunze or even a Brian Thomas, and this may work, and they may be like elite players that come in and really shape who your offense is. But in a lot of ways, I felt like they were doing that with Dalton Kincaid last year. And it never felt like it worked because they had Stephon Diggs, who was this target monster that, you know, I think Brian Thomas to a lesser degree, but definitely like a Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers would then be if you're adding them into this offense. It doesn't have to be that. I just look at like examples around the league where, you know, Romeo Doubs and Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tank Dell last year in Houston, where you're getting value in the second and third round and a guy coming in and being a valuable, like competent part of your offense with a ton of upside, and you're not selling all of your assets. Because one of the things with the assets that they have going into this draft with 10 picks, they can be a little bit aggressive day two, day three to move up and get specific guys that if you deplete that collection of picks, you're not able to do that as much. And I think that's an area where I think Brandon Bean has shown in the past that he's good at that.
I think that's a really good point at the end, because the cost of doing business at 60, moving up from 60, you can get a lot more bang for your buck at that point. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to have to cost yourself a third round pick. And in most cases, not a next year's second. It depends on how high you're trying to get up to. Like, if you're trying to get it anywhere from 30 to say 40, 33 to 44, you're probably going to have to include a second round pick next year, which is sizable, especially because the level of prospect you would be getting goes down. But I do find the conversation around number 60 also interesting. And we'll get back to some of the better fits at 28 because we're not quite done there. But this is just where the conversation's taking us at the moment. One thing I found interesting that Brandon Bean said last week when talking about first round grades, he was like, the line between late one and early two is not as big of a gap as top two to bottom two. And that immediately like bing signaled in my mind, like, is he talking in generalities? Is he talking about this draft specifically? Because if he's talking about this draft specifically and they're sitting there at 60, it would tend to support the argument of them maybe trying to move up from that spot. Or let's use a counter argument here. If they were to move up, like maybe not like a huge, huge move up, but they keep 60 in the back pocket to move up to go get themselves a receiver. I think that puts them in a spot where they can move down from 60, recoup some of the stuff they just traded away, not like the future second that they would probably move to do it, but still recoup some picks. So that way they're in the third, they have enough stuff to get back into the third if they wanted to. And you're kind of addressing your needs that way. So you can get minorly aggressive to get a guy if, let's say, a Brian Thomas Jr. falls down to 20 and they make a deal with the Steelers for next year's second round pick and maybe like a day three pick or something. Move down from 60 because the talent depth of talent isn't as great. Get yourself a third round pick, find a safety, and then, you know, bottle your picks back up in from day three to move back into the bottom of the third round, just like they did for Dawson Knox all those years ago. But yeah, that's just one of the things that I thought about when he brought that up. And that's why what they do ultimately at 28, I think will inevitably shift how they approach their strategy at 60, just from a trade up, trade down standpoint. Because if they stand pat it at 28, then they could get aggressive and move up to like 45, 46, 47 range.
That's why I think I don't get like the, oh, it has to be like, if the Bills leave the first round without a wide receiver, like they end up trading back or something. Like, I think that's actually like almost a, just because of the way this wide receiver class is set up, like that's almost a more positive scenario. Cause like we were saying, like, let's say they leave the second round with like, they end up trading back and they get a wide receiver early in the second round. And then they get like a safety with like their other, you know, like, or defensive tackle with that other second round pick. Like, I feel like that to me, like if I'm grading that, like depending on the players, of course, but like that's a win. Like, I think if they leave like the second round with guys like that, where like, and then they didn't have to give up that capital, like to move up or something like that, because the guy wasn't there. Like, I don't think that's them. Like, I think that's successful. That can be successful. Like, it doesn't have to be like that big move up. And like, I know like that can be exciting. And like a lot of fans want that, but I do think like, they can be successful. We've seen, like Perino was saying, like it doesn't have to be a high wide receivers. Like some of the best guys, like we're not drafted in the first round. Like, I think that's a position where we've seen so many guys have success that aren't those like top round picks. Like that can be addressed at a variety of points. They can have guys that can turn into, I mean, we can look at Stephon Diggs as an example of that. Like he was a day three pick. Like stuff happens. So I think that's why, to me, like, I think to your point, like the trading back and like having the multiple picks day two is a much better scenario and trying to address those other positions. Like if you lose other dates, like you lose the late second round pick, like that would have an impact. So yeah.
Hey, Dead Chicken, what about you?
No, I think that I think you guys both set that up really well. I don't think that there, you have to limit yourself to thinking about, or like, and fans do this, and they're fans, they're allowed to do anything they want, but like putting yourself in a situation, like, I love when people like get mad at fans for acting like fans, like that bothers me. But either way, like if you are totally invested in the wide receiver or it's a failure like situation with this draft, you know, that's okay, like in the first round. But I think that they're like, I've been trying to get people used to the idea that there's a couple of defensive players that if they're there at 28, like, it's a conversation. Like Cooper DeJean out of Iowa, one of the pass rushers, like a Jared Verse, if he somehow is available there at number 28, I mean, we're going to have, if you're inside the Bills war room, a real conversation about, okay, what's the value of each one of these positions? What are we getting here at 28? What's still going to be available for us in the second round? And what's the gap there as we're looking at our board? And it's hard because, like, you do all these mock drafts for 3 months and you got, it's like the movie Draft Day, right? Brian Thomas over everything, or whatever the little flashcard says. And I feel like a lot of Bills fans are kind of in that mode right now. Sure. But it's a dangerous place to be going into a draft like this, where I think there's so many different outcomes.
They do have other needs, right? Like, I think that's, they have other needs. They're not like perfect at these other positions. Like, I think, you know, safety, defensive tackle, edge rusher, like, we could, there's many other things that, like, they do have to address. Like, I think that is, but yeah, the wide receiver is exciting though, because it's like they traded Steph, moved on from Gabe. It's a, that's the flashy position, obviously the biggest position, but I agree with you. I think there's like, you have to be prepared for that as well, because those guys could drop.
If they don't, if they miss out on like the first five receivers, and I'm including Adonai Mitchell in that, because I do think he's going to be a first rounder. Just listening to, you know, people who, it is their job to know draft intel. Like, I was listening to the Establish the Run pod that Adam Schefter was on. And
I heard that too, yeah.
And he was like, they were talking basically about draft props, and Adonai Mitchell's was, I think, like 27 and a half or something. And 27 and a half or 28 and a half, something like that at that point. And Adam Schefter's like, I feel good at this point, which was a couple weeks ago now, that he will be gone before then, in so many words. So if the Bills do miss out on the first five receivers here, I am very much in the camp of, I would not be surprised in the slightest bit if they just punt on that position until round two, because at that point you would be borderline forcing the pick at receiver, because it would be one of who? Troy Franklin, Xavier Worthy, Ladd McConkey, Ricky Pearsall, Roman Wilson, like that, Keon Coleman, that cluster of guys. And the guy that Matt brought up, Cooper DeJean, if he's there, that's got Sean McDermott written all over him. He is that type of guy, but I don't know that he's going to be there. But we talk about Jared Verse. I think he'll probably be gone too, but he's a perfect fit because he plays mostly right defensive end. Exact size, speed, height, weight, arm length measurables that they look for. Pass rusher is definitely an option. I think the sneakiest one here, though, is offensive line. And that could either be, to me, someone who has the flexibility to play guard/center or even guard/tackle. Because the one thing that we have not talked about basically at all this offseason is the fact that Spencer Brown's going to be a free agent after the 2024 season. And they just paid Deion. Are they going to pay both? Is Spencer Brown going to turn around and become one of those, hey, comp pick formula guys? Because he might, if he has another,
too soon, Joe.
If he has another good year, he might wind up being a $14 to $15 million a year type of guy. And are the Bills going to want to pay that for Spencer Brown, who just got there after they just paid Deion Dawkins? So guard/tackle, center/guard, I think are very sneaky options. Graham Barton from Duke, Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon, Jordan Morgan from Arizona is, I think, one to keep an eye on. I think they had him in for a visit, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was on Ryan Talbot's thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, but he's not really guard.
Did you say Zach Frazier?
Zach Frazier, I think it might be early for him.
Okay.
But the wrestling.
But if Sean McDermott's
pumped, I know. It's the wrestling background. He's not really a great athlete, and like,
does it matter if he wrestled?
I suppose not. But yeah, wrestling over real fit into the zone blocking scheme. I think that's probably where
Sean. Do you think like Harrison Phillips at all, like the arc of his time in Buffalo, maybe like cooled them on that?
On wrestling?
Yeah.
No.
In general,
no.
Like
no.
It's like he was just very average, right? And he was a guy coming out. I actually went back and looked at his scouting report this week because I wanted to kind of put it up side by side with Fisk from Florida State, just to see like if there's any similarities. They're actually very opposite prospects. Like Fisk is much more athletic, like his combine testing, everything like that. His like some of his top games were like really, really good stuff. But like Phillips to me, like he was like the opposite of what they look like. You mentioned Verse and like the size measurables, the athletic profile. Like Phillips was like not that, but he wrestled. So it's like, let's get after it.
It was that was early into the regime. I do think there is a chance that Harrison Phillips winds up back here in Buffalo once his contract runs up in Minnesota. That would be very
good locker room guy.
Very
I think if he's your fourth or fifth guy, you're in a good spot there. But like,
how did we get here? How did we get to Harrison Phillips coming back after
everyone who was still has to come back at some point? There's like a reunion tour they have to do for at least like a training camp appearance or like something like that. So
I was honestly shocked that they didn't bring in Levi for a visit.
Listen.
Well, wasn't there that little like thing that popped up on his social media where he like insinuated that he was
in Buffalo,
like, going to come back to Buffalo?
He did, yeah, like, I didn't see any of that. Him like at the stadium and like
And I wonder if that was him. Like, yeah, like this makes all the sense in the world. And the Bills were just like, no, we're good.
Well, maybe they could have said, no, we're good for now. Let's see how the draft plays out. And then he might have been one of those little post-draft spectacular signings, but he couldn't wait.
Spectacular.
Yes. Yeah. They happen all the time.
Yeah, the Puna Ford signing really was spectacular.
Listen, if you really want to get into the Puna Ford argument, the fact that they continued to make him a healthy scratch over Tim Settle for as long as they did was one of head scratching. This is not why we're here. We're not here to talk about Puna Ford.
You said we could go wherever. I'm ready to
I suppose
about
that's right.
No format.
I suppose
no format.
I suppose that's my fault. That's completely my fault. Let's circle back to receivers in the first. Where to you both do you fall in terms of who makes the most sense in your mind for both value / trade up / trade down sort of thing, and what their vision is moving forward? And I suppose which of the players are you a little bit more cool on that are sometimes mentioned in addition to the Bills? Receiver only. Matt, we'll start with you.
So obviously Brian Thomas, from what like the ceiling, the potential fit, like what he did at LSU, like the big play ability, I think that if he checks all those boxes and you think that he's going to come in here, be a smart kind of guy that could pick up this offense really quickly, I mean, that's a home run, right? Adonai Mitchell's interesting because while it doesn't fit their typical behavior when it comes to assessing prospects because of some of the red flags.
What red flags are you talking about, by the way? Just so we're all on the same page.
Like, he's not very coachable at times. I think, you know, one of the reports out from Bob McGinn that does stuff with Tyler Dunn over there was that because of the diabetes, there's times that he, hasn't been a great person in meetings and, you know, stuff on the sideline and stuff. And then there's days when, you know, things are fine and he's a great teammate and he works hard and all those kind of things. I think that they're at a place in their build culturally where you can bet on the traits if you really like the player and work to bring a guy into your system. Now they're also coming off of the Stephon Diggs experience. And I think that they're probably going to have like a Heisman trophy pose against anything that's could potentially be like something that brings any kind of unrest into that locker room.
May I just
room?
Interject I with one thing? Smart, selfless, and versatile.
I heard
is what
that.
Brandon Bean says.
As soon as he said selfless. That, yep.
Anyway,
right. Continue. So if you're, but again, like, I don't know, we're going off of evaluations, right? Like they have to go off of what they.
Oh, I was just talking about your Diggs point.
Oh, yeah. Right. Sure. And that's the hardest part about this is like, all right, a lot of people, everything I just mentioned about Mitchell, like, are we positive that that's the everything that these scouts have figured out on the trail? I'm a little bit more lukewarm on the idea of a guy like Ladd McConkey and Xavier Leggett in the first round, only because McConkey, to your point earlier, he doesn't have a clean projection at this level what he's going to be. There's evaluators that argue that he's going to be more of a boundary threat than people think. But then there's others that think that he's going to be a slot only player in the league. And then Legette, you had that limited amount of production. I think Xavier Worthy is really a fun idea because of the speed, but like,
where do
is he going to be able to consistently? Yeah. We're going to, is he going to be able to consistently win on the boundary? I don't think you can make that case. So it's a very slippery slope to me at 28. I think two guys, Thomas Jr. and Mitchell, are probably the only ones where I'm going to come out of this draft and say, all right, you've added a bona fide potential number one down the road, but now it's on the team to develop that player. And also, like, what do we think of like Adam Henry, the Bills wide receivers coach? Mm-hmm.
Fair.
I mean, that's a legitimate question. I've never come away talking to, and this isn't necessarily to throw any shade at Adam Henry. I don't think we know enough about the guy. What was his impact last year on that wide receiver room? Khalil Shakir had a really nice year. How much did Adam Henry have to do with that? Things that we have to kind of learn. Chad Hall was a guy that developed players at the position before him. So now I have just at least questions about their ability to develop wide receivers. And those have to be answered.
Elena, how about you?
When is this coming out?
Probably later today.
Okay. I can't give full spoilers, but I was in this position. We have an ESPN NFL Nation mock draft where we go through mock drafting, as everyone does. And I was in a really weird position where, like, for me, I wasn't allowed to trade, but I was stuck. Brian Thomas was gone. And Mitchell, to me, I don't know. I didn't want to pick him because I felt like there was enough we heard. And I don't know, didn't want to pick him. So, I think the fit's there. Like, I think if they pick him, we're all going to go like, okay, he's got the size. It makes sense. They can play it. He can do the outside. You know, like, there's like, the reasons will be there. But to me, I think, like, I don't like any of the fits. I think is like where I come down is like at 28. Like, I'm not really like, I ended up picking, spoiler alert, I did pick a wide receiver. I'm not going to say who yet, but I picked one and I didn't really, you know, I could say whatever. I picked Xavier Worthy and I didn't love it. Like, I wasn't like, there was no receiver of the ones left where I was like really confident to pick them at 28. Cause to me, when I looked down the list, I was going pros, cons on all of them. There was like, okay, but he's got this issue and he can't play here. And I don't know where, like, Worthy, I was like, I don't know where I'd put him, but I think they've been wanting speed for a really long time. So I went with it. But like, they all have, to me, have enough that it's like at 28, that's why I feel pretty passionate that, like, to me, all of the wide receivers that like were left at that point, like 28, I don't think there's the right fit. Like, I think if you're going to use that pick, I want to either get a wide receiver I'm confident in that can play where I need him to. Like, they don't need another, like, they've got Curtis Samuel. They've got Khalil Shakir. They have, like, these, like, guys they can move around on the inside that can run a slot. You know, like, they can be in the slot and get it done. They don't really, like, that's not really what the need is here. They need a bigger guy. And, like, I felt like there were enough issues with a lot of them that I didn't feel comfortable with. So I think it's an interesting thing where, like, I don't think any of those guys, like, if Thomas is gone, and of course those top guys are also gone, like, there wasn't a guy that I was like, he should be picked at 28. And he's like, that makes sense to me. But that doesn't mean they won't, and they'll work it out. And there's also, like, I think what's also missing here is, like, some of them, like, I would like to know where the Bills see them. Like, I think it was helpful, like, drafting Dalton Kincaid, once it was like, okay, that's how they'll use him. Like, that informs, like, some of that. And I think knowing how they use some of these wide receivers, like, if I'm like, oh, he's not a natural fit in this offense, but maybe they're like, oh, he'll do this. Like, that would help. But to me, I'm not like, I know that's not, like, the funnest answer. But, like, to me, that's kind of, like, where I know.
Joe is a master strategist. He's worked us both up into this lather, and now we've basically been making the argument about why the Bills should trade up to get a wide receiver. Because the options at 28, just like, you know, the more you kind of sit and think about it, it's like, well, we can poke a lot of holes in all these.
I will agree with both of you. I am a strategy guy for sure. I didn't do that with that intent. However, 28 is convoluted because I think what you were alluding to, Elena, is that Z/slot hybrid player, which is essentially what Shakir and Samuel both are. Neither of those guys are winning against press coverage at X receiver consistently, which is why you can't play him over there. And that's why they went out and brought in Matt Collins to come in and be their run blocker and do all the dirty work until they actually draft someone who can do the position. you are making a bit of an argument for why moving up for a top tier guy makes sense. See, the trading of the first round thing, it really depends on the day when I wake up as to like, I could
trading up or back?
No, trading up like into the top 10.
Into the top 10.
And I'm saying trading away their first round pick next year. I differ on it by the day because I can absolutely see Bean talking himself into a guy like Roma Dunze. Like we're talking about the smart, selfless, versatile thing. We're talking about X receiver who can block, who can go up and get it, who has the speed to do it, who has the size to win with the physicality. Someone who's coming from a pro style offense, all these other things. I've kind of cooled on Malik Nabers with them because I'm not sure it's as much of a
culture,
a personality meshing that I think they would want to bring in. But if Odunze is on the board at 9 or 8 or 9, the Bears have 4 total picks this year. 4. That's it. They've done business before. They did business as recent as Ryan Bates, trading Ryan Bates for 144.
Do you think you can get it done for a fourth and a sixth this year and next year's first?
Let me get my chart.
Get your chart out. Because I agree with you here because I think the Bears need picks. And I also think the next year's first, if you're the Bills and you still think that you're in this window, is going to be late first round and you're hoping Minnesota is going to stink. And that second this round is pick is going to be basically almost in the first round anyway. And you could be aggressive next year and trade up, especially if you're going to get that comp pick for Spencer Brown. Or no, you won't get it for that.
No, but you are getting one for Gabe Davis and you are getting one for Leonard Floyd as it stands.
But also the other thing is too, is you know, you're getting, like, I think we've seen him. I think that's important too. He's kept being like, oh, I don't want to, you know, Brandon Bean talked about last week. Oh, when we used the first round pick in Carolina, he didn't really, wasn't in favor of like how it turned out then. But we've seen him use a first round pick for a wide receiver before. Like he did it for Stephon.
And also, how did he end that answer?
Huh?
How did he end that answer?
He was like, ah.
If it's something that makes too much sense, like Stephon Diggs, heck right. Yeah. Like his last words were, heck yeah. But
like
anyway,
someone who he was also paying versus like you get this. If you take a wide receiver in the first round, you also get that fifth year option.
Exactly. So my chart, I use the Rich Hill trade value chart, which takes into account recent draft day trades to establish values. So for the to get up to 9, I worked out a trade that would be of equal value. That would be 28, 2025 first, 60.
Listen.
Okay, would you let me finish?
I'll let you finish. Sorry about that.
60, 128, and the Ryan Bates pick, but getting back 9 and 75. So you get a third round pick. You get Odunze. And so that way you still have...
I don't like you losing my second round pick. I don't like that.
You're going down 15 spots.
I don't hate it as much. I don't hate it.
You're going down 15 spots.
I don't hate it as much.
And we just talked about how he doesn't value the late second round as much as the early second round anyway.
Right,
and
right.
Talking about maybe moving down anyway. So if you can do that, get Odunze, and then you still have Minnesota's potentially early second... listen, I'm just trying to get everybody. This is my time of year, okay? I'm just trying to get everyone in the mold of like this shit could happen. Like everyone who's like, oh, they won't spend that much. They literally just got an early second round pick for next year. We all could absolutely see Brandon Bean going up there and going up to the podium after they do this trade up and go, you know, we feel like we have the second round, 2 seconds that could help shoulder the blow of not having a first next year. So we don't have to wait as long, blah, 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 blah. We've heard it all before with him when he's,
there's an argument to be made that like when you're picking at the back half of the first round, it's almost better to have those picks in the second round. As weird as that sounds.
Did I just convert Matt Parrino to trading up to the top 10?
Listen, I've always been fringe. I've always been fringe. I think this podcast might have pushed me over the edge, though. Like, I think there's a lot of good points.
This is actually why I brought
and
you here.
I really don't want number 28 to be a situation where we come out of it feeling like, for the fans' purposes, like, right? Like they took a wide receiver, but it was like, it was super blah. There's not a lot of energy around it. Like if you don't, if you can't trade back and you have a plan for that you're happy with, like I do agree. Like for as much as like this is a reset year, it's still a year where you have Josh Allen in his prime. And I think you have to try to win and put together the best roster that you can. And if that's going out and getting a wide receiver, like most drafts, Odunze is not getting to nine. Like in most drafts, he's probably number one. So I think that in and of itself,
the number one
wide receiver in most classes.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. I thought you're saying like,
No. Okay. I mean, like in most drafts, he's probably the number one wide receiver. I think you make an argument two or three of the last four drafts, he would have been the number one. But I digress.
So just to conceptualize what the Bills would have after this proposed deal that I just put out there, they would have nine, Rome Odunze, 75. They would also have remaining, 133, 160, 163, 200, 204, 248. So basically a normal
draft. Right. And then I would.
And not your first round pick next year.
I don't hate it. I have always been like, if they can get there with that, I guess.
It's equal. It's equal on the trade value chart. And at that point, the quarterbacks will be gone. So the prices are going to come down once the quarterbacks are like, there's a quarterback premium price that you have to pay to get up that high. But once the quarterbacks are off the board and teams know you're not moving up for a quarterback, that's where it gets a little bit better. And from a Bears perspective, they just had a ton of success trading a pick to get a future first, which wound up being number one this year to get their quarterback of the future. They're probably not thinking to themselves, hey, we're probably going to win this
year,
because they're going to have
Odunze for the Bears at that spot where there's going to be some action. I think the Bears are sitting there with Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. I don't think it's like necessarily a pressing need. Now there's an argument to be made that they're not making that pick for 2024. They're making that pick to pair him with Caleb Williams for the next couple of years. So they may well just very sit and pick, but interesting.
And again, they've only got four picks this year, and one of them will have already been used by
them. There's a stuff, yeah. All
right. That's my piece on that. Anyway, I did not mean to get to that Rome Odunze trade up to the top.
Why
10
not?
Spot,
it's,
but
a, it's on the table.
I know. Odunze, it legitimately, when you read about him and you watch him, it's like, this dude is exactly what I think they want this year. And after listening to Brandon Bean, is when I got off the neighbor's train, because even though he's legitimately an awesome prospect, the yards after catches everything, but the smart, selfless, versatile thing, I'm like, they're looking at character this year. That's going to be a thing. Outside of that, 28, some, I guess, one thing that, one name that, a couple of names, I should say, that I keep kicking around in the brain as a, maybe this could be a thing. Troy Franklin is one, because they have done a lot of work on him, and he's got speed. He runs a lot better in game than he did on his 4.41 time speed. That's the physicality aspect to it. I think he can play some X receiver, but it's just depending on how often you want to put him out there. And then Xavier Leggett, which I know a lot to some, probably to me, would be a bit of a reach, but he's in that cluster and he's somewhat exciting. You also have to read what other teams' writers are writing. And all our friend Joe Person, who covers the Panthers for The Athletic, alluded to the fact that Leggett, at I believe his pro day, said something along the lines of the Panthers won't let him get past 33. So that might be his weird little draft range. Whether or not that comes to fruition, draft day lies happen all the time. Let's say Ladd McConkey is on the board and the Panthers didn't expect him to be, maybe Leggett falls. But if Leggett is thinking that that's his range, then maybe he's an option at 28. So there's a lot to stew on. But, okay, I've been talking way too much.
Never.
We've worked Joe into a lather now.
Yeah, he's all spiced up.
No, it's draft season. I am always lathered. Always happen.
Well, we're very excited for you that this is your time of year, so, and I hope you enjoy the rest of this week and that you get everything you want from it. No,
You're trying to say goodbye. I'm asking one more question.
That you're enjoying this week. And like, I so desperately wish I could have like an eighth of that excitement, but I'm here for you.
This is how I got my career start. So that's why the draft is so near and dear to my heart. Yeah, I know. So Thursday comes. What happens? You don't necessarily have to give me a player. You can if you want, because I don't know if final mocks are out. I don't want to do spoilers for you. I get it. Everyone is out for creating content. So what happens? Position, trade up, trade down, stay.
What? I mean, well, shit, Joe, trade up. Go get yourself Roma Dunze. I think you've worked me enough into this spot that it makes a ton of sense. Listen, I've said for weeks that first round pick next year for the Bills, unless they don't make the playoffs, like that would be something, right? Like that would be the scenario that Brandon Bean was talking about last week, where they trade up and then they don't make the playoffs. And now you're sitting there picking at 15 or 16 and you have to watch the third best edge rusher in the class go off when you could have added that guy right there or moved up to get one that you want. And that's another thing that's interesting. Next year's edge class is much better than this year's edge class from everything that I've looked at, which means.
And they still have three guys this year that they can use pretty well. And they like
for sure. Jonathan too. And so like that is another part of it that kind of like, do you want to take away that first that maybe, you know, you could have some mobility to get up into a range where you get a guy if you do make the playoffs and you do make a run. But I don't think that the Bills can go into this draft after moving on from a guy like Stephon Diggs and not have like a significant plan. So I think out of all of the scenarios that play out, like the best scenario to me is landing Thomas at 28. But I just think that that's a world that we're not going to live in. There's way too much smoke around, way too many teams with him. He's going to be gone. I don't think he gets past the Steelers.
He might be gone in the top 14.
And then you're looking at, I think that's a little bit too high. I think like if you have the guy that you think is going to be the missing piece of this offense, trade up and get him. If not, man, I am really on the interior offensive line train at 28. I think there's a lot of value there, and that is going to be a pick that fans are just like, what in the blue hell is happening right now? But it's going to be something that I think Connor McGovern and David Edwards are fine for 2024. I don't think that that's where you want to kind of sit on your hands in terms of building that offensive line, thinking a couple of steps forward. And to your point on Spencer Brown, I mean, this is a really good tackle class. Do they want to put one in the cupboard in that department? Well, you know, if a J.C. Latham is there at 28, a Marius Mims, one of those kind of guys, people are talking about those kind of moves for the Cincinnati Bengals, who obviously have a better receiving core right now, but also like have a couple of starting tackles that are kind of already in the roster. There's a lot of different moves. I don't know, Joe. Don't put me on the spot. I don't know where they're going to go. I haven't decided.
Do they come out of Thursday night with a receiver? Good. How about that? No, I asked you. You just answered the question with you. This is what we deal with in the media room every single day.
We're not even talking about food yet.
In the first round?
Oh, don't. Do not. Yes.
No.
What? But that gets what you just said.
I know. I think in the end, it's going to be challenging to move up. I don't know. It's like you just said, we're going back and forth. One second I think one thing, one second I think the next thing. I'm in a case of emotions right now. Like, I don't know. There's a lot going on here.
Mm-hmm. I could tell. Elena, not the question I just asked Matt, but the previous question that he meandered through.
I think that's what's interesting about maybe this draft more than like recent ones that I remember, where we're all kind of like shrug emoji, because I think there is like an extent of this where it's like it could go like 10 different ways, and you could tell me that's what happened Thursday, and I'd be like, okay, I could see that. Like when you first asked that question and Matt started answering, and I was deciding what I was gonna say, like my first instinct was to be like, I would Elena Gettysburg, would trade back. I would probably, sitting at 28, I think the wide receivers I want are going to be too high and a little bit more than I want to spend. You did make an excellent case for trading up. And I think if that was there, I could be convinced. But I think they're going to ask for more because I think the teams know that the Bills are desperate for a wide receiver. So for me, I would trade back. But Brandon Bean and I are not the same human being. And I really don't see, he doesn't like to sit still. And so if you're putting me on the spot, I think he will move up in some way. Like, I think knowing, you know, from Brandon Bean's past experience, from obviously he's willing to give up. We've seen him, he's willing to give up resources to move up and get a guy that he has. Not going back into the Kyrie Elam debate, but a guy he's got, like Dalton Kincaid, a guy he's got conviction on, he's willing to move up to do that. And I think there could be a scenario where, let's say, Brian Thomas drops to 17, 18, 20, you know, like that early, late teens range, early 20s. I could see him moving up to do that. I could see the big jump. Like, I think if I'm on the spot and having to pick, like, to me, it's trading up if I'm, like, projecting what Brandon Bean will do, because I think if there's a guy he likes, he has a really hard time sitting still. And so that would be my best intuition going with them. But you could literally, like, we're all in a bit of twist, because I think there's scenarios where it could all go. But I do think, like, there is no doubt. There is, like, 18 examples in Brandon Bean draft of him being willing to give up resources to get the guy he wants. And so we know he's willing to do that. And I would not be surprised if we're walking out of Thursday with a wide receiver and he gave up some picks to do it.
Do you know what my biggest problem right here is about this whole conversation?
Is it me talking into Roma Dunze?
It's that there is so much built up anxiety around this pick.
Why?
Because the Bills have never drafted a wide receiver under Brandon Bean in the first three rounds. So whatever they do, it's going to have to be for the guy that's going to be the guy if they're going to take a guy in the first round. And to me, there's so many questions with Mitchell and Leggett and McConkey in that back half of this round that, like, it makes you uncomfortable with the pick. And it's almost like, well, your favorite thing, punting it and being able to kind of go with a different position. You know, Punapalooza is coming back this summer. I know that you're juiced up about that too. I mean, really, I don't think we can be.
What's that? I hope they add a third.
Bills to draft a punter now, just for this.
I will order a new stopwatch from Amazon right now if they get a third punter. Go on.
No,
I'm
you
sorry.
Didn't.
I didn't mean to.
But that's my struggle with landing at something at 28 is that you have to make a pick that's going to, like, matter so much. And you're picking potentially from a pool of players where there's just so many questions.
But does it have to? Like, can't this be, like, a wide receiver? Like, if you're saying they're going to walk away from this draft with maybe multiple wide receivers, why does this one early have to be, like, the Stephon Diggs replacement? Like, I don't know that he has to be. Like, it can still draft a wide receiver in the first round without him being, like, the guy. Like, he can be a guy, and maybe he'll develop into the guy. Like, I think maybe that's, like, for fans, like, that's why, like, maybe when you're judging the wide receiver pick, let's say they do pick a wide receiver day one and it's not, like, a huge jump up, like, maybe it doesn't have to be, like, okay, how is this guy going to step in for Stephon Diggs? Like, that is not necessarily, to me, like, the case. And maybe that's why, like, there does feel like there's a lot on this, because it's like, how will you replace Stephon Diggs? But maybe, like, this first pick won't be that replacement directly. Like, there's too many, like, wide receivers with how it's falling that don't fill into, like, a Stephon Diggs mold. Exactly.
Here's where I'll leave it. It's a different time in terms of their build, meaning their needs at the position are different than what they once were. And because of Josh Allen's trajectory being where it is at this point, to where he is at the top, and now you have to start planning for when that trajectory starts to go downhill a little bit at the back half of his career. That's why finding someone who can potentially develop into that number one receiver, I think, is the most important thing. Not to say that they would step right in and be target vacuum 140 target person. That's why, to me, an idea like trading up for an Adunze is really intriguing, just because he's not going to be that guy right away. He's coming from a pro style offense where they are running a very similar concepts to what he would see in the NFL. The ability to do that and jump right in is there for him. There's not as much projection with him. And then you can kind of build off that from 1 year to the next. That's why I think he's so compelling, if they're okay with the cost. But in general, I think finding someone who has a varying skill set to what they already have is the most important part at the receiver position. And there's just, I don't love him as a prospect, but there's something about Adonai Mitchell to me that I think the Bills would be prone to love, because it's weird, because it's like this size and the speed and that type of ability. But the weird part about his profile is that he shows really well on film. He separates, but like he has 4 contested catches in 2023 as a big guy, which is not a lot. His contested catch rate is low. His yards per route run has been horrible his entire college career. And he started at Georgia, went to Texas, had to deal with Xavier Worthy. Quinn Ewers isn't a great quarterback, blah, blah, blah. We know. But still, yards per route run is a pretty predictive stat. And then yards after catch, like, I think he's just over 3 or something like that. Now, granted, his ADOT is pretty good, around like 16, but the yards after catch really isn't that great. So there's analytical metrics that aren't great, but his film is good. And Bean's a film guy at heart. So to me, I would not be at all surprised if they wind up doing a little mini jump for Adonai Mitchell. And that's kind of where I'm leaning. We'll see when I get to my final mock.
That would be very on brand of them. Who knows? So I could.
Yes. There's a little bit of Kyir Elam to Adonai Mitchell, and not in a bad way. Like a talk yourself into it. Like, oh, we believe this guy can be.
Lovely.
It. That's
not the selling point you want on a first round pick.
I'm not trying to say, I just said, I think he's a little bit of a flawed prospect from his profile, but I could absolutely see them being into it. And there's a lot of people out there who are going to listen to this and are still going to be excited about Adonai Mitchell. By the way, yeah, Adonai? You called him Adonai.
I did. And I'm pretty sure in Dane Brugler's draft guide, is it?
It's Adonai.
All right. Sorry about that.
AD Mitchell a lot? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
AD Mitchell. All right. Thank you, Joe.
Adonai Mitchell. All right. On the reel, thank you guys so much. This has been excellent. This has been a little bit of a snippet into our normal day-to-day life here on the beat. But thanks so much for joining. Take your turns. Tell our listeners what you guys have coming up, where they can find you.
I can do Elena's ESPN. That's all you need to know. You'll find her really quickly. Just at Matt Perino on Twitter is usually, or X, whatever it's called.
Twitter.
It's probably the best.
On Twitter at A Getzenberg, and ESPN.com as Perino very helpfully advertised. And listen to him on the Shout podcast. I'll advertise his as well.
Woo, woo.
Ooh, look at that. Look at the little cross-promoting. All right. That's going to do it for this Buffalo Beat. The next time you'll hear from me will be after the draft. And I'm pretty sure everyone's heads will be spinning at some point, whether or not Brandon Bean moves up, moves down, whether he stays at 28. If he doesn't take a receiver at all at 28, there's going to be head spinning no matter what. So that is where we will leave you. The Bills pick for now, number 28 on Thursday night. We'll see exactly what happens. All right. My name is Joe Biscaglia. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time.